Good morning. The markets are moving and so are you from the BizNews studios. This is BizNews Daybreak for Friday, the 16th of January, 2026. I'm Alec Hogg and here's the context you need to win the day. We start with overnight news from Washington that Donald Trump has received a Nobel Peace Prize medal. Well, sort of.
Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado met today with President Trump at the White House, and she presented her Nobel Peace Prize to the president. Here is Machado speaking earlier to reporters.
I presented the President of the United States the medal. 200 years ago, General Lafayette gave Simón Bolívar a medal as a sign of the brotherhood between the United States, people of the United States, and the people of Venezuela in their fight for freedom against tyranny.
That is Maria Corina Machado, the opposition leader of Venezuela, and she went on to say that Venezuelans are counting on President Trump for the country's freedom. The meeting comes as U.S. forces seized a sixth oil tanker near Venezuela earlier. The U.S. and Taiwan have agreed to a trade deal. It will lower tariffs to 15% from the previous 20%, and U.S. tariffs on goods from Taiwan are now on par with both Japan and South Korea. Also, as a part of this deal, Taiwan semiconductor companies will make at least $250 billion in direct investments toward American energy and artificial intelligence operations. Here is Bloomberg's Michael Shepard.
It's been a top priority for officials there in Taipei, but also here in Washington, because Taiwan is such a crucial source of the chips that go into artificial intelligence and AI data centers across the U.S. and around the world. And they wanted to make sure they get this locked into place and that they can have some assurance that supply lines to the island are really in a good place.
That is Bloomberg's Michael Shepard. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon is not interested in becoming Fed chair. He told that to David Rubenstein during a U.S. Chamber of Commerce event. Dimon also reflected on J.P. Morgan's new headquarters in New York City.
If you look at what we have, we spend $40 billion a year on people, which is important, $4 billion a year on real estate. We want to have great real estate. The old building wasn't fit for purpose. It was too small, couldn't handle our trading floors. I looked everywhere. I looked downtown. I looked at Hudson Yards. I looked at buying Vanderbilt. But we could tear that building down. We could buy air rights. You know, I thought it was the best location in the best city, and that we should build it there.
So no Jamie Dimon in the Fed into the future. Why am I not surprised? My goodness, who would want to take that role that Jay Powell has been in, well, for as long as Donald Trump is there, trying to tell you what to do. Locally, well, there's lots of attention on the foot and mouth disease crisis. John Steenhuisen's press conference about going to war against the disease that is devastating livestock farmers hasn't had much impact where it matters. Here's KZN farmer Pete Keane.
Congratulations, Minister Steenhuisen. You've finally done what you should have done probably a year ago. I have a problem. I have a farm neighbored by state land. In other words, a farm bought by government and never handed to recipients on my boundary. They move cattle onto this property from time to time. I've reported this to the Department of Land Affairs with no help. My fences have been stolen. I've reported to the police. My fences are still not returned, and the goats walk onto and off the farm. I know that the neighboring cows have notifiable diseases. There's nothing I can do about it. The pound is of no help because the state has let that fail. When I asked for assistance in this matter, they can't help. I did once impound cattle successfully. My fences were cut in about 260 places and left as revenge. I asked the state vets to bleed the neighbor's cattle on communal state land, and they said they did not have test tubes. I'm very careful on the farm to have all the biosecurity in place that the state asked us to. Signs on the gates, no livestock, limited access, disinfecting vehicles, footballs, etc., etc. But the goats and the cattle won't walk through there. Neither will the bush pigs, nor the crows that land in one carcass, sit in a pole with the bloody feet, where the pigeon sits next to it and takes that bloody stuff to the next farm. So the ghosts walk around the footpaths and through the stolen fences. So, Mr. Minister, can you get hold of your departments and all your friends in the other departments? The chief of the police, the chief magistrate, the head of land affairs, the goat herd is next door to me, the tribal chief on the adjoining land, and the goat, and the bush pigs, and the crow, etc. To all have a meeting and decide who can help me. From any or all individuals below, please tell me, how are you going to help me with my biosecurity?
Still on foot and mouth disease, I spoke to Action SA's parliamentary head, Athol Trollope. Now, he went along to Steenhuisen's press conference and got chided for asking a question. Apparently, parliamentarians aren't supposed to ask questions in press conferences. Anyway, Athol, who's a farmer, is, for many people, the best qualified on the subject of any parliamentarian. Here's his insights.
Foot and mouth has become like a felt fire. The dairy industry in KZN is on its knees. And, you know, I listened to Peter Keane talking to you yesterday. Dairy farmers love their cattle. They see them every day. Sometimes three times a day, their milks, but certainly twice a day. They know them almost by name, but certainly by sight of the animal. They know their animals. They know their production. And when you see production starting to go down and you see your animals developing mastitis and you see them walking on the ends of their legs because their hoof covering, has hoof walls have fallen off, it can break a person. And, you know, Alec, the other question that was asked yesterday to the minister that he evaded and didn't address at all is, what about compensation? Mm. When you have an outbreak, Alec, by law, you are expected to inform the department that there is an outbreak. Now, what that does is immediately it brings your farm to zero income. Zero income. Dairy farmer, beef farmer, feedlot. Suddenly you have zero income. And the minister makes a lot of fuss about movement of animals. And he's right, technically. If you want to confine and control a disease, you must quarantine it. Any kind of disease, whether it's in a hospital or whether it's on a farm, it must be quarantined. But if you're going to quarantine a business, you must give it some support. Otherwise, that business will fail. Or else, people will not report. And they will move their animals, because there's a price differentiation, and they'll move their animals to where they can sell them. They've got bills to pay, children to educate, and that kind of thing. So what has happened is that the farmers are expected to fight this war with their hands tied behind their back, with their own resources. And John Steenhuisen was asked yesterday, what are you going to do about compensating people that are reporting incidents of foot and mouth outbreak and that are going to zero income situation? And he was absolutely still on that. The only good thing that came out of the press conference yesterday was that the minister has said that he is going to appeal for this to be declared a national disaster. Now, that's still a long way from being declared a disaster. What he said and what he's done in this government are two separate things, but at least they have woken up to the fact after 4 years that we have a national disaster here. And I'm going to conclude by saying we learnt a lot during COVID. And that is what I actually wrote in my press statement. We learnt during COVID not to ask less questions and be accepting, but to ask more questions, especially when it comes to the economy. You know what COVID did to the South African economy. Well, that's what foot and mouth disease has been doing to the agricultural economy for the last 4 years, and it's still not declared a disaster.
It's not only on the foot and mouth felt fire that Pretoria is out of touch with reality. South Africa's foreign policy decisions are equally harmful, needlessly hurting an already underperforming economy. Earlier in the week, my colleague Chris Stain spoke to political and policy specialist Professor Theo Venter.
What is our international policy posture, actually?
I'm not sure that we know exactly what our own posture is. I think we have a difficulty reading the room temperature in the White House. We've got a difficulty reading the room temperature globally, where we fit in. We just had the naval exercises in Simonstown, and a few hours before we made this recording, Iran decided to withdraw. from that issue. Apparently, and due to backdoor negotiations with the South Africans, because it just became too hot to handle for us, with Iran having trouble. And if you listen carefully to at least two voices in America that's not Donald Trump, the one is Senator Kennedy, when the Senate had to discuss AGOA. AGOA, of course, is the American legislation that provides us tariff-free access to the American economy. His question to the trade representative was, how do you see South Africa's role in AGOA if they are having all kinds of military exercises and arrangements with our enemies? And he mentioned the enemies, Russia, China, and Iran. So that's clearly how they think about it. And the same was echoed in the House. And I'm sure in the White House, they think exactly the same. Now, if that is how we want to play our neutral role, I think we're in for a very, very hard surprise, because in a world where multilateralism is moved out in favor of bilateralism, your relationship with a specific country is now becoming much more important than your relationship with a collective of countries, a collective like BRICS or a collective like the G20. So the Americans are by far the most capable military force that the globe has seen in many, many years. But that is the one side of the balance. The other side of the balance is nobody can compete with China in terms of manufacturing. So China churn out products. They want a stable global trade climate or area or arrangement, while the Americans are looking at their military might and they're saying, but if we want something to happen, we will make it happen. Donald Trump even said a day or two ago to the New York Times, I don't care much about international law or treaties. I will do what I think is right. We're in totally different waters, and this, I think, must force the South African government to seriously rethink our foreign relations. And we've heard so far reaction from the South African government, the government of national unity, but it sounded like ANC policy on steroids. It doesn't sound like the DA or the Freedom Front Plus or whichever other party, IFP, had a think tank around what we should do. This is still, just like our military strategy, is still ANC approach. It's not government of national unity approach.
On to the investment front now. The Rand a steady, 16 Rand 34. Gold price $4,600 an ounce. And Bitcoin, $95,500. If you've been following the program through the week, it's pretty much where they all were yesterday. But the JSE didn't move much. It had a decent day for financials, but the rest didn't do as well. Our portfolio, though, had quite a nice run. In the local side, Purple Capital getting back above 2 Rand 50, up by 3% overnight. We Buy Cars above 51.5 Rand, up by 1.7%. You might recall that you could have bought that in the early 40s just a few weeks ago. Capitec 2%, Remgro 1.5%, Pick and Pay 1.5%, First Rand 1.3%. Sounds like a great session yesterday for the Biz News Tribe. On the other side, though, Prosus and Sasol came under pressure. They've both been doing well against the trend lately. Sasol down 5% yesterday, though, Prosus down by 4%. But on the international front, boy, have we done well through David Shapiro's recommendation some years ago that we include ASML into the portfolio. It had another gangbuster session last night, put on another 5%, enjoying a bump from good investor demand for the world's biggest semiconductor manufacturer, Taiwan's TSMC. Here's Bloomberg's Carmen Reinecke on the Stock Movers podcast.
Tech rebound today. The first one I'm looking at is Taiwan Semi. So this is ticker TSM. ADRs are up about 6.5% right now, which is an intraday high after the company said it expects to spend as much as $56 billion in CapEx this year. And this is a lot more than analysts expected, and it really shows that they're feeling very confident in the AI boom going forward. It also said that it expects revenue growth to be close to 30% in 2026, which is also a lot more than analysts recommended. So just very positive on the overall AI trend. It's also lifting ADRs of ASML. So this is a key supplier to Taiwan Semi. So these ADRs are up about 6% right now, which is also an intraday high. And it's boosted the market capitalization of ASML to more than $500 billion. And I think this is interesting. So this is the third European company to ever hit this milestone. So, you know, we're just seeing a lot of really good moves there on the AI theme.
There aren't that many European hardcore tech names either, so this is one of them. And when TSMC gets a big boost like it has, you see the effects immediately. By the way, TSMC's ADRs, ticker TSM, up 56% in 2025, up 92% in 2024, up 42% in 2023, and so far this year it's up 15%.
So with investments on BizNews yesterday, we published a watershed research paper which concluded that because of institutional mandates and exchange-traded funds, the flow of money has become more important than investing fundamentals in the way the markets move and share prices go. Now, this is quite astonishing stuff. The melt-up that occurs when the money comes in can be easily reversed when funds flow out. The authors urge us to watch the flow of funds rather than worry too much about whether the fundamentals of a company are being reflected in the share price right now. And in that context, an important development was reported yesterday by our partners at the Financial Times. Go and read that piece on BizNews if you are an investor or are interested in the reasons why there's been so much turbulence for the first time. It kind of makes sense to me right now why we see share prices going to unprecedented levels, and also why smart observers are saying, watch out, because when this thing turns, it's going to be nasty.
The giant bond fund manager PIMCO is diversifying away from U.S. assets because of President Trump's, quote, unpredictable policies. Those have caused flare-ups in market volatility. That's what PIMCO Chief Investment Officer Dan Iveson told the FT. This comes just a few days after Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell said he was the subject of an investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice. The market response to the DOJ's move has been pretty muted, but Wall Street executives have said the investigation has made them more concerned that Trump is eroding the Fed's independence. Trump is pushing the central bank to lower interest rates, which could ultimately cause inflation to jump. One senior Wall Street trader at a large firm told the FT that Trump's moves on the Fed would weaken the central bank's credibility, and that would hurt its ability to fight crises.
And now you have the edge. For the full interviews and details behind these stories, head over to biznews.com. I'm Alec Hogg. Thank you for starting your morning with us. Now go and seize the day.